The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Kalayla Williams. I'm the Director of Neighborhood Library Enrichment Programming here at the Free Library of Philadelphia. And before we begin, a few notes. Please silence your cell phones, of course. No flash photography, please. And do remember that a book signing will take place upstairs after tonight's reading. Tonight, I am honored to introduce John Waters. He will be in conversation with my colleague, Jason Freeman, producer and editor in the library's author events department, which, of course, brings these awesome events like this one. And John Waters. How does one begin? We all know that John Waters is a director of unconventional, unorthodox, and comedically unsettling movies, from cult favorites like Pink Flamingos to Desperate Living and Female Trouble to mainstream hits like Hairspray and Crybaby, which Gen Xers like me just watched over and over and over again. From Polyester to his first 1964 shorty, Hag in a Black Leather Jacket, which was the name of the film, when I say shorty, I mean like a film. He has written more than 20 films or TV shows, and he's been a cinematographer, a producer, and just about everything else. He's also cameoed, of course, acted and done voiceover works in dozens of films and roles ranging from everything from Ted Bundy to a flasher to a reverend to a phone pervert, and of course, himself. Could overlap, who knows? He's also a book junkie, and he's authored several of them, including Make Trouble, Carsick, John Waters' Hitchhikes Across America, and Crackpot, The Obsessions of John Waters. To cite all of his accomplishments would be to stand here all night. But in his absurd creativity that leaves no quarter for rules, that doesn't kiss up to or look down on anyone, he has rattled and shaped pop culture and made us all question why, as we pursue what drives us, we give a flick about what others think. He's a lesson in offensive insight and weird fearlessness, and we love him for it. In his newest book, Mr. Know-It-All, The Tarnished Wisdom of a Filth Elder, it's what it promises, part essay, part memoir, and a how-to of the funniest and most bizarre guidance and musings possible, which is just in time and exactly what we need for the abject insanity of the world we're living in. Everyone, please welcome John Waters.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You notice I stayed standing until you sat, so that's what you do for any pope, really. So let's dive into the book, and I'll try not to rip off Terry Gross and Fresh Air too much.
I love doing her show, but I haven't heard it. You know, I know you do it, and you do it for about an hour and 40 minutes when you tape it, and then she edits it down to whatever it is, 40 minutes or something. But she's always been great. And she told me I've been on her show one of the most of any people, because I did her in a long time ago, in the very beginning. And if she likes you, it really helps the book. I'll tell you that much.
No, it sounded like two old friends sitting at the end of the bar. And same thing, I can't listen to that before I write these, because it's just too much confirmation bias. Anyway, let's dive into the book. So in my reading of this, and a lot of, has anybody read it yet, just out of curiosity? It just came out. All right,
yeah.
So, all right, I have knowledge you don't. As I read this, I kept figuring out a different genre that it was, and I'm not sure that it is one, and I'm not sure it needs one, but what do you consider this book to be?
I think it's like all my books put together. I mean, it's like Shock Value was about my movies, early movies, and it ended right before we made Polyester, and this goes from Polyester on, and it's each chapter on one of the movies. It's also, Crackpot was a book of essays I wrote, and this is certainly essays about new things that obsess me. And then Carsick was a stunt where I hitchhiked across America. And in this book, I take LSD again at 70 with Ming Stoll. So that was kind of a stunt. And advice to the opposite of role models in a way, which were people that really helped me become who I wanted to be when I was young. And this is advice now that I've learned after 50 years in show business and to try to help, how to get through the minefields and negotiate and end up never being around assholes. And it's true that my dreams have come true, and couldn't that make you puke?
Yes. Yeah, so the first maybe third of the book is you devote a chapter to, I don't want to say when your movies went mainstream, because
I clawed my way to the top and then fell back down to the gutter where I started. Yeah.
Right. I want to save all the movie questions for the latter half of this. And by the way, I'm going to try to keep it to 25 or 30 minutes to allow enough time for you guys. But the other two thirds of the book, it's like a shadow box of like all of the things that you like. And let's get into those here in a minute.
All right.
So there's a breadth to this that I found really critical to my understanding and kind of a whimsy. How is this book different? I read that you were writing a novel, and this feels like a nice bridge to that. There's so much creative writing in
this. Well, you know, a novel I've never written before, but basically the first two-thirds of Carsick were fiction because I imagined the best rise that could happen and the worst, except I'm in it, so that's easier. And that all my movies are fiction, certainly, every one of them. But I've never actually written a novel, so that's what I'm working on right now. When I signed the deal for Mr. Know-It-All, it was with the Glamour Puss, the novel, too. Not Glamour Puss, Liar Mouth. That Glamour Puss was an old movie I didn't get made. But I talk about that movie in this book. So, yes, but is this a bridge to it? This was, you know, I love to tell stories, and I don't know that I have many left after this book. I told a lot of stories in this book, right? And it's pretty honest, I think. I think I talk about a lot of stuff in here. This personal, some sad stuff, some, you know, I tell you how to tell someone you love them without emotional risk. I tell you how to, I tell you how to beat death even at the end. There is going to be a resurrection. It's very elitist.
It is. If it's not honest, God only knows what you're harboring beneath the surface there. So I want to talk about some of these lessons. The second section is called Bye Bye Underground,
yeah.
And it's sort of forays into Hollywood. And again, I don't know if you resist mainstream. Because,
well, they
like
were,
some of
certainly.
It,
they were made, yeah, by studios under the complete Hollywood system. And Hollywood treated me fairly. I mean, it's just common sense. The more money they give you, the more shit they give you. You know, it's just it's a trigonometry lesson or whatever that math is. you know, and they treated me fairly. Yes, I went through the market testing. I did all the stuff that makes you crazy in Hollywood, fought with the suits. But I cashed the check, so I can't really complain. And their job is to make money, and mine didn't. So they were right from their viewpoint, too. I just happened to make the exact movie I told them that I was going to make. But that argument means nothing in Hollywood, because they never read it in the first place. Or they read the treatment of it, or they read the first 10 pages, which is what gets a movie made, and the last 10 pages are what makes it a hit, by the way. But they never get that far. And they always test it, and even the main guy, the head of the NRG or whatever it's called, that does all the market testing, he said to me when we were doing Crybaby, "What's the norm we test you against?" So he even admitted it was a futile exercise.
Well, so many advice things that you read are, you know, shoot for the stars, aim high, and all this. I love how practical these are. Can you talk about some of these practicalities? Like, and you say floundering is like treading water. You have to do it before you swim. And once, yeah, you learn to swim, what are some of those really practical, maybe,
well,
counterintuitive to being a rebel filmmaker?
That a no is free. Get used to rejection in show business. If everybody stops, it's like hitchhiking. It'd be a traffic jam. You only need one person to stop. And you just have to create the feeling of success. Your movie doesn't have to be a success, but as long as you can confuse them enough that it is successful, they will give you money. And you can fail upwards, which means you pitch a movie, and I would go in and make it sound really commercial, which I wanted all of the movies to be commercial. I'm amazed all of them didn't make money, really. But I never understood why Hairspray was more commercial than Cecil B. DeMented, really. So that was the problem. So I would go in, and I would always have an ad campaign ready for them, which would surprise them before I even pitched the movie, saying, I know, I'm on your side. We have to sell it. You know, I understand that. And I would always kind of, all the things I thought, what are they going to think against me not to make it? So I would bring those subjects up right in the beginning and say the opposite of it and how it's not going to be like that this time. And then the best thing ever is if you go out to dinner to pick up the check and say, we're all in this together. No one's ever said that to them. And they're so shocked, they give you the deal. Yeah.
It's great.
It's worth that one business deduction.
Well, and I love you say, if you join the unions and they send you to do press, they have to fly you first class.
Oh, so. The unions. Yeah. I feared the unions in the beginning because I made all these movies I didn't know. I wish I had joined them even earlier because unions today have special deals for the lowest budget movies and everything. And then later in life, you get, well, first of all, I have the best pension ever from the Writers Guild, but also you get money even for movies that failed. You know, they don't see if they made a profit or not for every video cassette and all that kind of stuff. So you really do get residuals at the end that are very, very important.
Also, there...
And they have to fly you first class. Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple things, and I sort of touched on it before, that there is a frankness to this book also that is very funny. You were warned, sir.
I thought it was a dog about ready to lunge up here. Right. All dogs try to bite me.
I know.
They do. And people say, oh, no, he's real. They're like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're constant surprises. You have a whole section devoted to not liking dogs.
Well, no, I don't wish them ill. I feel bad for them that they're, like, stuck in this prison, sentenced to a lifetime of human caresses.
I think that sounds attractive to some people.
They want to be free, roaming in packs outside, like in Yugoslavia, biting people.
Also
what
sounds appealing.
What they should be doing.
So you're very frank. You talk about what doesn't, like what didn't. You talked about the weakest version of Hairspray, which must be like great.
What do you mean the weakest?
It says we. Like, out of all the different versions.
Oh, the different versions. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I thought they were all fine. It's really hard to fuck up those characters. I'll give myself some credit. But the last one, I mean, the TV one I like kind of the least because they made Motormouth have a Las Vegas body. There's a lot of fat, black, African-American women that can sing in this country. Why can't we cast one? And they made the gym teacher straight and Rosie O'Donnell played her. I didn't get that.
All right. But it's great. It settles a few scores. You call out a few festivals that ripped you off.
Oh, no, that's the only thing. Fingers. I don't say anything bad about anybody in the book that gave me trouble. I don't name them because we're all in this together. But except the three people in my entire life that ripped me off for speaking engagements. And I name them and I say, I'll get you, my pretty. Right.
I love it. Well, in any book that has this shout out, page 212, librarians are always smart, a little nuts, and know how to party.
That's
that
true.
That is us.
That's true. And I have been the speaker for the National Library Association, regional ones, and they're always great. They're always smart. They always have a good sense of humor. And they're always the opposite of the cliche of what a librarian is like. They're usually ready to roll, I'm telling you. Yeah. And they're always against censorship.
True.
Because really a library should give any book to any kid. If a kid comes in and has heard of the Marquis de Sade at 8 years old, give it to him, you know? It's fine. I mean, I learned everything from the library. I used to go in and look up stuff, you know, and it used to say C librarian. They wouldn't let me in, so I would steal those books. So they should give it to the children, really.
Excellent.
If a child comes and asks the librarian, what is a pauper? You should tell them, really.
This is a great segue to, let's talk about sex. The line, Don Knotts with a hard-on might be the greatest sentence since the last line of Great Gatsby,
by the
way.
That's why I never went to the baths. I'm the only gay man you never... Walking around me in a towel, being leering at people. Can you picture that? It would really be embarrassing. I've never been to the gym either. You know, I hated gym in high school, hanging on those ropes. It's not erotic to me. Yeah.
Well, you write it like you say it's the obligatory chapter about sex.
Yeah.
And
well, you have to have a dirty part. Yeah.
Well, not shockingly, it's laced throughout. And what I found like legitimately, it's beautifully poetically written, much like Lolita. But talking about changing norms and there's a real nostalgia for things, and in particular, sex clubs.
Well, yeah, they used to have amazing ones. My favorite one was in New York. What was it called? But you walked in, and it was upstairs, and it was the set of a park, like in a Hollywood soundstage, with like birds, tweet, tweet, in the trees and everything. But it was for blowjobs, basically. But it was also homeless people went there because it was cheap, and you couldn't tell who was up. They'd say, hey, get off me! So it was really surreal. It was a class issue. And people would say, hey, this is a sex club, bum. And they'd say, get the fuck off me. So it was a crazy place, especially those birds in the trees. Tweet, tweet, tweet. I thought, what the hell is this?
Wait, is that the one that's like a
night shift,
a sightseeing tour?
Well, no, all of them now. All the ones, the toilet. That was a place that didn't have real bathrooms, just people. That's a fancy restaurant now. I wouldn't eat there. I look at these, I think, if you knew what went on in here, you'd ask your meat to be cooked a little bit longer.
I love this too because I always think of indexers, people who go I don't mean name names in a bad way, but so many named people, and I like to think I'm versed in a lot of. I knew who Jerzy Kaczynski was, and you're like, oh yeah, I saw Jerzy Kaczynski.
Well, I used to see Jerzy Kaczynski at the Hellfire, and there was a straight and gay sex club. But you'd be standing there, and they had glory holes everywhere, and you'd be talking, ow, a dick would hit you in the back, and you were talking to Jerzy Kaczynski about Romaine Gray's, the new novel and Move Down. I saw people, sex tourists went there. I saw lots of famous people in there, because you could go and be a tourist. You didn't have to participate, but then you'd be sitting there talking to somebody and somebody would crawl over and lick your shoes. Just get away. Those were the days. Yeah.
Such is life in the library sometimes too.
Well, the library I grew up in was like that.
Well, and
the first glory hole I ever saw was at the library, I think.
Not this library. Well, and there's something, and again, it's beautifully, nostalgically, touchingly written, and I see this as a recurring theme in the books, this idea of breaking down barriers and between people. And in a sense, mainstreaming sex, perhaps the way your movies were, even though they were just as deviant and filthy, you just got into a bigger audience. Can you talk about sort of breaking down the gay, straight, everything?
Well, I'm weary of, I think people should be gay or straight. They can come in, come out. I think you should have to audition to be gay. I think there's, but I want to go further. I want to kind of admit all the bad things people said about gay people. Yeah, we recruit. There's one. Get him. Or, thank you, Mom, for making me queer. You were dominating. And I actually want to go further and really scare straight people, scare the horses again. And this is the new thing that I'm pushing for all gay men and gay women to have oral sex together for the first time. And would that be a new strain of heterosexuality or homosexuality? I'm trying to figure out, because neither have ever done that, usually. So it would be, okay, guys, sneeze in the cabbage. All right, ladies, talking to the mic. Assimilate that.
All right. I swear this is how I have the questions listed, segueing into your passions. And it's when the book, the whole thing is so lively and it's such a fun book and there's so much knowledge there too. It's pretty wise, but I love when we get into your passions. In brief, detailed chapters about music, food, the primate painting market, and that's not paintings of primates, that's the ones that like Coco.
Monkeys that yes. painted. There was a big movement to make fun of abstract expressionism. It's the only art left to collect. And you're going to be able to flip it soon. I'm just giving you good financial advice.
Yes. Your friend Andy Warhol, air travel, doing LSD as a 70-year-old vacationing in Provincetown, and your brutalist dream house. Yeah. You make fun of some of these things, and you love them so much,
too. I only
make
fun
too.
Of things I love,
I know,
pretty much.
That's what I like about it. What freedom does that give you in talking about them?
Well, because it means that I love the subject matter that I'm going to parody, and I think I have to know it pretty well. I did a lot of research to parody that. But at the same time, you know, I am questioning the own rules of the society that I live in, my own rules. There's so many rules today, more than when I grew up with my parents, you know, with the gaily correct and politically correct. And I believe in most of it, but I think some of it, like babies, so give me a break. You know, some of them, and adult babies, I'm not marching for them. You know, I have limits.
First they came for the adult babies, and I said nothing. So other passions. Can you tell us about seeing Elvis Presley for the first time?
Well, that's the first time I ever jerked off to Elvis Presley. That's pretty rock and roll, isn't it? And yeah. I didn't even know what masturbation was. I'd never even heard of it. I thought I had discovered something. And you know who else said that? It's Carol Maddow. She said when she gave a blowjob the first time, she thought she had invented it. Because she had never heard of it before. And she thought, what a good idea this is.
And I don't mean in the same fashion, not in the J.G. Ballard kind of way, but you loved car accidents as a kid.
I liked them as a kid. Now I'm be terrified I'm going to be in one. You know, I don't want to die in one. But certainly as a kid, I played car accident, and my parents were understanding, which how could they have been, really? But my mother would take me to junkyards, and I'd walk around a little ghoul going, oh, there's been a terrible accident here. And my mother would take me, and she would just look at the junk man, who would look at me like I was Rhoda Penmark, you know, the bad seed. So it was, I don't know. It was, my parents made me feel safe, even though they were horrified about what I did.
Truly, you talk about it.
Well, the only good thing of they're dead that they don't have to read this book. Oh.
But they were alive for so many of these things, you know,
they were
serving divine tea in the kitchen. Yeah. And I mean,
I got my sense of humor from them, though. My father, after he saw Dirty Shame, my last movie, I thought, why does this poor 80-year-old man have to know what a plate job is, right? And he said, well, it was funny, but I hope I never see it again.
So
there's a blurb.
Maybe my favorite section of the book, I don't know if you all, everyone knows this, but you have a son named Bill.
Yeah, that's my favorite chapter, too.
Oh, really?
There's a reborn babies. Do you know what they are? These people get them that I think might have lost their child, or I don't know, but they get a baby doll, and you adopt it, and there's an adoptive mother. It takes 8 to 10 months to get them, longer than a real baby, and they take the skin off, and they put the skin on to make it look real. They add human hair, eyeballs, and everything. So I ordered one, my son, but I couldn't deal with a woman because I would start laughing. So my assistant did, and they said I wanted an angry baby with bad hair. And I had an old Christmas ball from Bayou Village that said Bill, so I named him Bill. And Bill came, and he had a penis, and I said, well, I couldn't look because I'm not a pedophile. And then I said, well, is it circumcised? And the woman said, well, it's not. And I said, well, I'm a Catholic American. Could it be? And she went, well. And then she called back 3 days later and said, a little clay, the operation was a success. So Bill, I've had forever, and he just sits in that chair. I took him out once, but you can't because you forget and leave him in the car, and then the police come and they break the window and everything. And I took him to my father's 80th birthday party, and I didn't show him. I kept him in the trunk, and then like all my nieces and nephews were like, come out, I want you to meet our new relative. What, Uncle John? And then they came and I opened it, and they all went, ah! Like, so I realized Bill had to stay home forever, really. And he has sexual needs, I know. So his hand is real near, so I'm waiting for an earthquake. It might touch it once, and he will be awakened.
Yeah. You need like a webcam for this. So I found, that was my favorite. I found the most poetic, beautifully rendered section about death. And one of your heroes, Pasolini,
Yeah.
Has the line, once life is finished, it acquires a sense. Up to that point, it has not got a sense. Its sense is suspended and therefore ambiguous.
Wow.
And,
that's a good one.
He's your hero.
My favorite is Joy Williams, who said the most depressing thing I ever heard. She said, the dead forget you quickly.
All right. That is.
She also said another great line, water can't get wet.
Yeah.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, and...
Excuse me, I have the croup. Remember that? In the 50s, everybody had the croup. What is that even? You had to have vaporized. Oh, my God, you got the croup.
It'll make a comeback. But... My last question before I talked a couple of minutes about what these folks, there is so much material in this book about questions to ask about what you should do as an interviewer, backstage stuff. It's very intimidating. But I got to say, my question was going to be, will you ever retire? Clearly you will not. And I guess my questions are, what's next? What rules are there to break? Have you broken them all? Who is your
Phil? I don't try to just break rules. I try to think of ways to surprise people. I would have been a good psychiatrist, a good defense lawyer, is that I always like to go into a world that I don't understand and maybe will never understand and try to figure out human behavior. I believe everybody's born innocent. I believe the opposite of the horrible thing the Catholic Church teaches of original sin. You're born guilty. What a terrible thing to tell anybody. So I believe something happens to everybody. And so I'm interested in what that is.
It's a little generic as a question, but I know somebody's going to ask it too. There is so much pragmatic advice about making movies here. All that aside, what's your dream film project?
My dream film, I don't know if I have one anymore. I mean, I've been paid, since I made A Dirty Shame, I've been paid 4 times to write movies that never got made. So I wrote them, and I still have meetings about them happening. So who knows? They might happen. But if they don't, you know, I've made 18 movies or something. I mean, Criterion keeps putting them out. They're putting out Polyester next. They keep putting them out. So it's not like I haven't spoken. And you know, they keep wanting to get cheaper and cheaper. People say, why don't you go on... Kickstarter. And I said, I own 3 homes. I'm not going to ask people begging or go work for people. Would you work for nothing? I've only made 17 movies. Will you help me out? You know, it's you know, I can't go backwards. I'm too old to be an anarchist. Yeah.
Well, let's turn it back a little bit. The much maligned millennials are coming up now, and I think they get a bad rap.
I know. What is their bad rap? I'm not even sure what they are to give them a bad rap.
It feels like a bad rap.
What's the bad rap about them?
I don't know. Don't work hard. You know, avocado toast.
I don't mind avocado toast.
No, I don't either. I think they're unfairly maligned. I guess when it comes right down to it... Who is a filth elder heir apparent? What do you tell kids about? We live in challenging times.
Yeah, they should be out there using humor as terrorism. Definitely, they should be. That's why I like the Satanic Temple. You know, they're really funny, and I'm hardly a Satanist. You know, I've never been to a goat sacrifice, and I hope I never do. But I love that how they fight against church and state, and they embarrass people and show up. And like they got, when the public schools allowed Bible schools in it, they won the right to put satanic Bible schools in, and they had pictures of parents. Like, and then when they put in the Ten Commandments, they put like a next to it like a satanic thing. But I think they're hilarious. There's a good movie called Hail Satan about them. So I like their activism. I like that they're out there causing trouble and making people laugh at the same time. We need that again, because you can humiliate the enemy through humor, and that is terrorism, where nobody is physically hurt, but their reputation is hurt, and that's what we need to do. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're lucky that we live in a country where we can do that and not get the firing squad.
Yeah, So before I talk about
so
you guys,
far, yeah.
There another one of your heroes that is mentioned a few times in the book, Jean Genet, has the line, to achieve harmony and bad taste is the height of elegance. I think
that's lovely.
To that.
I forgot he said that. That was like subliminally. So, because when I went to Catholic high school, they would they would finally leave me alone, the teachers, if I would just read. So I read Genet, the 120 Days of Sodom. And they didn't know. They thought, isn't it nice? He's reading. But I was getting an education, just maybe not the one that they thought. Yeah.
Okay, before we go to the audience questions, you say in the book that you've heard every question up to and including being asked if you'd ever blown Manson family murderer Tex Watson.
I just said no.
Can you intimidate our audience by detailing a few other questions you've received?
God. One said, my father told me I almost went home with you in a bar. That was a new one. I said, tell him hi. You know.
I thought I was a pretty jaded reader,
yeah.
And then I had a couple moments.
Which ones?
You said you've been presented every conceivable thing in a signing line, and then you've been shocked a few times.
Well, I've signed penises, balls, tits, asses, tongues, but one time a girl said, would you sign anything? And she pulled her Tampax out and splattered it down. I did. She bought the book.
That's the professionalism. All right.
You gotta buy the book, though. Yeah.
All right.
And I have this John Waters camp that I go to every year, which is pretty amazing. Oh, good, there's some campers here. It's Jonestown with a happy ending. And and last year, a girl said, could I do my bucket list? Could I eat dog shit in front of you? I thought, well, I guess, you know. And she had a little piece in a tray, a deli tray, and she did. I didn't look, but you can see it on Instagram, I think. She was...
I was pointing
you?
At you. No, I mean... Oh.
It's her. There she is. No.
Well, I think that provides us another excellent segue. Let's get some questions for you guys.
You mentioned that you get, or used to get, scads and scads of magazines and newspapers and read them. And that's going away. You don't get as many magazines. What do you think is going to happen now that there's a... Do you think that we're missing something by not reading, you know, physical...
Well, it depends. As long as you read it. I don't care if with my book if you read it on a tablet or if you listen to the audio version. It's fine with me anyway you read it. I personally like to hold a book, and I like to sit in bed and read it. I don't... But that's me, you know, And I do fear, like, magazines I did used to give 150, they're dwindling, believe me. And the magazines I get now, I'm shocked. They're, like, magazines that were once really successful, like, 8 pages long. You know, it's amazing. It is kind of over. And I read them online. I think, like, some of them are really well-designed. I think the Washington Post has the best online reading the paper. And I still, when I'm out of town, I hate, you know, I always still buy newspapers, but I'm always shocked how much they cost because I have a subscription, so even though I pay them, I'm not aware of every day. Like in New York yesterday, I went and bought my 5 papers. It was like $12.50. I thought, God, you know, and you can read them online, but it's not the same to me. I like to see above the fold, below the fold, where it's placed, where the pictures are different. So, but it's, you know, it's a thing of the past. I say in the book that I'm not all nostalgic completely at all. I say that anybody my age that said we had better fun then or it was better when I was young just means you're an old fart and you're over because you should know new music. You should know new things. It ain't going back, you know. So you need youth spies. You need people to help you explain it. But still, you have to know it and you have to do it. So it's not going to change, you know, the same way I don't care how people watch my movies anymore. If they see them on their phone or it doesn't matter to me. I'm not against Netflix making movies. It's somebody else that can say yes to a movie. I'm for anybody that'll give you the budget.
Hello. Earlier you talked about librarians and how they're very against censorship. And we live at a time now where everybody has a platform if they so want it. So I wonder if in a world like this, is there a line where you would say that censorship is something that needs to happen?
No, that's a good question because I'm against today in Berkeley when they won't let people speak. I am against that. And I remember feeling bad in the 60s. I went to a rally when Agnew spoke and we shouted and he couldn't speak. And even then I thought, you know, that's not right. I think people should speak. I'm for the extremes of free speech, even terrible stuff. That's why the Civil Liberties Union said that Nazis have the right to march. That's why I think there is some porn that is completely obscene and against women. But I guess we don't buy it. Don't look at it. And to me, the extremes of freedom sometimes are really bad, but we have to have them to keep everybody free. I think we should allow people to come on college. Just don't go if you don't want to hear it. Yeah.
What advice do you have or words of wisdom for young film people?
You know, it's weird. Not one person that ever paid me a penny in my entire life ever asked me if I went to school. So the thing is, use the school for as much as you can for their equipment, to meet people, to network, to find out how to do it. But don't expect the school to get you a job as a famous film director or an actress. Then you have to participate, see every movie, read every casting place, find out who the casting agents are. Go. Apply for everything, and you're going to get turned down for everything at first, everything. But try to meet people. And you learn how the business works, too. That's the thing that's just as important. You might be a good artist, or you might know how to do it, but you have to know how it works. Then what? How do you get a gallery? How do you do this? So I think it's important to know the business you're trying to enter and participate in that world, especially while you're in New York or anywhere, really. You don't have to move to New York anymore, really. I mean, you have to get noticed in New York. But I always say this in Philadelphia. I like the people in Philadelphia that say, I never go to New York.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about Fruitcake and whether there's good odds on getting that made, perhaps?
You know, Fruitcake was my children's Christmas adventure. I had a development deal. It almost happened, and then that company changed and went out of business, and it never did happen. It's about you might have these in Philadelphia. We have them in Baltimore. They call Meat Man, and they knock on the door, Meat Man, and you go downstairs, and you'd say, I'd like a turkey and 2 pounds of veal. They go shoplift it from the nearest market, come back, and you pay half what's on the label. And this is about a happy, functional family of meat thieves on Christmas Eve. And it's all kids' movie, you know. It's all children in it. And Fruitcake is the name of the little kid who gets separated from his parents when they get busted and runs off with Tweefy, a little African-American girl who has bad gay parents who have made her have gay Kwanzaa.
Hi. So it's a similar question about another children's movie. If you're ever going to make or release the version of the PG version of Pink Flamingos.
Oh, Kitty Flamingos. So that was not made as a film. That was an art video I did for an art show I had in New York, and it's been shown in many galleries when I have it, because I don't think of it in my filmography. I think it was a video art piece where I rewrote Pink Flamingos and took all the dirty stuff out and then had children read it. And it's Divine doesn't eat dog shit at the end. She eats dog food, you know. But the kids loved it. And the parents were uptight thinking, oh my God, is my child gonna say to fuck a chicken, you know? But the kids didn't know the weird stuff. They just knew it was a battle of gross out and everything. And they had a great time. And I cast all the little kids. They weren't professional actors. I didn't know their parents, so they were friends of mine's friends' parents. And the little kid that played Crackers came in. I gave him his little interview. And he said, I've been in a couple movies. I said, you have? Which ones? And he said, I don't remember their names. And I thought, wow, look at this kid. And then I said to his mother, he's been in a couple movies. She said, he told you that? He's never been in one movie. This kid's gonna go far, let me tell you.
I would like to know if your suit jacket is a tribute to Gritty because you're in Philadelphia.
I'm sorry, what?
If your suit jacket is a tribute to our new favorite mascot, Gritty.
I don't know who that is. I doubt it because it's a Japanese designer. But maybe, is it a sports figure?
Our new hockey mascot.
Yeah.
He is Gritty like the city.
You know, I'm Mr. Know-It-All about everything but two subjects, sports and science fiction. So I don't know, really. I somehow doubt it, but if you like to feel that way, I'm happy with that. Yeah.
We aren't broadcasting this, so you can say whatever you want afterwards, so report it to the paper.
Can you talk a little bit about how it was to work with Divine, what she was like in the old Baltimore days?
Well, Divine, I guess I call she Divine when Divine was playing a part. Divine wasn't trans in any way. He didn't want to be a woman. I always said he wanted to be Godzilla or he wanted to be a monster. We thought him up to scare hippies originally. And so Divine was an actor, you know? And Divine was a very, very kind, quiet man in real life. At the end, he wore expensive men's suits, and he played a man in the last movie he made. But he was funny. He was a pothead, definitely. He was smoked pot a lot. And he was funny, and he was really funny and kind and went through hell in high school. I mean, he was really hassled in high school. He was overweight and feminine, and they really were terrible to him, including the teachers. And I think the high school he went to had an anti-bullying campaign kind of in his name recently. And Divine used to say we'd be something like this, and he'd see you in the book sign. He said, see that guy? That guy used to beat me up in high school. I can't laugh about it now. I can't say, oh, ha, ha, ha. And so he had that anger in him. And that anger really helped him create the character of Divine, which was very, very different from what he was like in real life.
Hi, I know you wrote about Andy Warhol in the book, but I just got the book, so I haven't read it. Can you talk a little bit about, this is a person I think of who must just have been a kindred spirit for you, Andy Warhol, but I just don't picture him being a funny guy, and you're so funny.
Who?
Andy Warhol.
Oh, Andy Warhol. Well, Andy, I have a whole chapter in the book that is my parody of experimental writing because he did a novel called A, where he just gave Undine and Bridget, who were on speed, a tape recorder, and they tape recorded every stupid motor mouth thing they said and then didn't edit one word out and print it. So it was a novel you almost could not read. And my book, my chapter is called Run On Andy, and it's one run-on sentence about everything. But I'm sticking up for Andy, basically saying that why is he the villain in movies now? Why are all his people that work with him suddenly taking credit or writing embarrassing books about him? And each year he's dead, they get braver and braver and try to take it. And so I'm sticking up for him, that I think that Andy, without him, we wouldn't have ever heard of any of these people. He invented branding. And also the fact that his movies, I think, are the very best thing he ever did. And one day they will be even more known than the artwork. And so I'm just trying to really stick up for Andy. And I knew him a little. He was very supportive of us. He put Divine on the cover of the interview. He recommended to Fellini to go see Pink Flamingos. So he was, and so I liked him. And I still, you look back on some of the stuff he did, was so great. And those movies are so amazing because he just stopped cinema and went back to the beginning and made it not move and had people on speed who would talk as much as they could but not say anything. So it was the anti-talkie. It was the anti-silent movie. It didn't move. It broke every rule of the cinema. So that's my chapter on Andy. Yep.
Over here.
So, would you recommend taking LSD at 70?
Here's the thing. My mother always said, don't tell young people to take drugs. Well, I'm not. I don't think young people... You took those little microdoses, you pussies. But... And I spent 8 months to get this acid. I got it from Timothy Leary's asshole, basically. You know, the provenance of this acid was really good. And if I had known how strong it was, I would have really been frightened. It was like 12 hours of hallucination. Whoa, you know, but it was great. And I did it with Mink, which I had known her for 50 years. So I would recommend it for old people to take acid if they did it when they were young and never had a bad experience and wondered what it would be like. It does clear out some cobwebs, and nobody can say, oh, you're having a senior moment. No, we're tripping. And if you miss that whap, 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 or that, the thing I had forgotten is that feeling in the phlegm in the back of your throat right before it comes on. That was the thing I had totally forgotten. I thought, oh my God, now I remember it. And we're all sitting there, and suddenly when you're young, you go, wow. When you're old, you go, whoa. But I would recommend it if you had all those things. And if you were in a really secure place, I did it in Provincetown on a beautiful night, but it was bear week. We didn't go out.
Let's get some more folks. I see a hand back there, and then we'll get to you.
Hi, so I was wondering if Taffy in Female Trouble, was her obsession with car crashes, like, inspired by you?
Certainly it was, yeah. Mink Stoll played that part, and then the little girl played it that we found when Criterion put out the re-release of Female Trouble. They found Hilary Taylor, who played the role, and she's 50 now, and she talked about what it was like and everything to do, and she was lovely. I haven't seen her since she was a child, so it was really nice to see her again. Yes, that was definitely based. I didn't go that bad. I didn't have a whole broken glass set up in my house and everything, but it was definitely based on my obsession as a child, yes.
Any other characters like that?
Pardon?
Were there any other characters inspired by you?
They all were, in a way. Like, when you write something, you're a little bit of every character somehow in there. Yes, or against everything. I mean, psychologically, I always say my films for shrinks are great. You can tell everything about me by watching them. But I think any writer does that. They take every experience you've ever had. Now, some writers, like Ann Tyler, always tells me she's never based one thing on anything true, which I try to challenge her. That's a lie, you know. But I think most writers do base it on some twisted form of something that happened to you. Yes.
Right here.
Hi. So in regards to Disgraceland, do you mind people leaving their notes and things on the gravesites or on the gravestone?
Are you cool with people leaving notes and things on
tombstones for
his future tombstone?
Well, Glenn.
Oh, well, that's the thing I've talked with the graveyard woman about, because Divine's grave, they leave all sorts of things. They write filth, the filthiest person alive. And she said, well, what's acceptable and what isn't? And I said, well, that's really hard to explain, because Pat Moran said on mine, they'll probably just write cunt. And I said, well, that would be unacceptable. But, and it's hard to tell the graveyard woman this, if they wrote cunt eyes, that would be okay, because that's an obscure line from Pink Flamingos. But I don't expect the graveyard officials to know that. So it's a really thin line on what is offensive and not offensive to us.
All right. No, this is our million. We'll have a boutique graveyard with people with really good taste. So I had promised the mic to, blue shirt right there. And then somebody over here towards the back, raise your hand, who hasn't yet. Yes, then that person back there.
John, many people who study early childhood development say that at 7 years old, you're pretty well formed for the rest of your life. Do you feel that you had everything you needed to know and were formed at seven?
Yes, I believe in that. I thought it was before three. I thought it was before what you can't remember is that's when it all happens, which seems believable to me. In a way, it is, because for the rest of your life, you're reacting against or for that. So I do believe in that, yes. I'm a really Freudian person. Even though he was wrong about something like cocaine, that was one he was really wrong about, if you read the book about cocaine. But I think there's penis envy, but men should have it, really, about what a good penis should do. Yeah.
Sir, you got the microphone back there?
Yes. You've mentioned censorship, your opposition to censorship a few times. I was wondering if what your thoughts are on the recent fracas involving Camille Paglia over at the University of Arts recently.
Which?
Camille Paglia, the professor at the University of Arts.
And what's
give us a bullet point.
What's that?
Give us the bullet point.
Oh, well, some trans students are asking for her to be removed because of certain comments she's made or in her writings and interviews.
Well, what were the comments?
Are you familiar with Camille Paglia?
No.
Okay, I just assumed that you might be because
the two of you are so similar. But tell me I read all the papers. So, what is the specific thing that she said that caused the trouble?
Yeah, that's something that's unclear to me. The students haven't been very forthcoming. I think they just feel like
she's. Then I'm against it because I think you should be able to say, trigger warnings.
Exactly.
I thought that's why you went to school, to discuss things that might upset you. I didn't know you had to warn. Believe me, they don't have trigger warnings in the ghetto schools in Baltimore. It's a rich kid's problem, really. So I don't know. I mean, I, I don't know. I think I don't understand that. I thought that you should go to school to learn about things that might make you uncomfortable and to talk about it and debate it and everything. Not be shielded from anything. Like, you know, like every person's going to have one of those pets with them at all times. Which makes me crazy when I think of it.
It's not too late.
You should be in a mental institution if you can't get on a plane without that fucking cat. You know? I get the milk out and think it's going to like, oh! They do that, cats. If you've been drinking milk, they lunge to your mouth. Be careful of your baby.
All right, more hands. So I see a hand right back there and back a bit more. Yes, ball cap.
Thank you. So Mr. Waters, you spoke about staying current, and I wanted to ask you what artists or writers or shows or anything that is capturing your fancy or inspiring you lately.
Well, I like, what's the Brazilian writer, Clarice Lips? Yeah, her. She is my favorite because she writes about nothing. The entire book is about when you can't, don't think about something for 1 second and go, that's what her books are about. And that is really abstract and really brilliant. So I would say I'm obsessed by her. I've been reading a lot of her recently. I'm incredibly interested in the American Taliban who got released today, the Johnny Walker Lynn, because I followed that case. And I believe that was totally overblown. And I also like his parents a lot. I like how they're handling it. So I'm very curious to see what happens with that case. I am for people getting paroled. That's why I'm very against Kamala Harris. She's the enemy of all prisoners' rights, just so you know. She made it in California so the parole could be 10 years instead of 5 between hearings. So I'm really against that. And I've worked with prisoners and I'm for prisoners' rights. So I believe that people get a second chance. Some, not a lot, but some should. And with him, I don't know. It seems like there was such hysteria about that when it happened that I don't know. I'm very curious. But I love that. This seems really unfair to me, that he's not allowed to speak in any language but English.
No.
How could they make that a law? How about Pig Latin?
Esperanto.
You're going to jail.
Well, this isn't a flippant kind of question either. Have you talked about this kind of thing with Patty Hearst?
Well, Patty Hearst is, you know, she's my dear friend, and basically she doesn't think it's funny what happened, but she was always telling the truth, and I knew she could act because she acted like one of them to stay alive, and at least she could have craft service now. Yeah, there was she made the movies with me to say fuck you to all that. Who wants to be a famous victim? You know, who wants to be the Lindbergh baby who lived, really? And so she'd gone on to it. She looks back, and when I saw that recent thing where they had with the SLA fat Bill Harris sitting there in his recliner chair laughing about it, I thought, you know, you kidnapped her. She was home doing her homework, you know? So I think I have not talked with her about Johnny Walker Lynn, no. But certainly she looks back on it. I same way, you know, anybody that's been in a cult or has been, well, she was kidnapped. She didn't join anything. But even other people I know that were in cults and stuff, they look back on it in horror, you know, by the time it starts out nice and everything's good. Until when that happens, you're so far gone, you don't know. And it takes a long, long time to break out of that. And I am interested in cults, certainly. And sometimes they are happy for a while.
It's also a good tagline. All right. sir, you seem... Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I was just curious about your guest starring on Super Jail. I thought that was pretty cool.
My guest starring on what?
Super Jail, Adult Swim show.
Oh, yeah. I do some of these things and I forget, you know? Yeah, I've done a lot of voiceover for Disney stuff. I played Manchovy, the richest fish in the sea. I've never seen it, but it was a nice job. Yeah.
Have they approached you for, like, Toy Story?
No, I want. Are you kidding? That's a job I want. Yeah.
More questions. Right here on the aisle, and then right, yeah.
Is this on? Hello? Oh, there we go. So other than doing LSD with Mink Stole, I'm going to Pete-Town for the first time this year, and I would love
you're
to
gonna
hear...
what?
To Provincetown.
Yeah.
And I would wondering what you would... What is the one thing that you would suggest doing there during Bear Week?
Oh, during Bear Week. Well, the most shocking thing is to see when the bar is closed at 1 o'clock to go to Spiritus Pizza, which becomes gay anarchy. And when it's bear anarchy, it's really shocking. Because his boys are getting bigger. I hate to tell you. I saw one last year. I thought, it was a hedge, but it was a person.
Is there a term? I know there's like otter and then there's like Kodiak.
My favorite one is, well, there's a blouse that's a feminine top. But then... The new one I hadn't heard was a dolphin. That's a hairy bear that shaves and gets Nelly. You know? But then I heard one that is too gay for me. When somebody said, I'm a platinum gay, I said, what the hell's that? And they said, that's a gay man who was born cesarean who has never touched a vagina. That's too gay for me. Yeah.
Few more questions. Okay, I see somebody adamantly waving back here.
No. Hi.
Oh, right, you're first. And
I just want to say hi.
Hi.
Can we be friends?
Yeah, well, that sounds like the Rotary chant, right? I played a Rotary Club. That was the weirdest thing I ever did. I thought I was in a real cult. And they get up and go, hello, hello. And I thought, oh, I'm going to kidnap me. What's going on here?
Promise.
It was my father's Rotary Club. So go ahead, yeah.
That was just it.
Oh. Hello, hello.
We like a few softball questions here. Okay, the gentleman back there who was adamantly waving, and then was there somebody on this side still? Yeah, and then you after that.
You are so entertaining.
Thank you.
Have you ever toured as a stand-up comic?
Oh, constantly I do, yeah. I have a Christmas show I do in 18 cities. I have the show called This Filthy World that I do maybe 15 times a year. So, yeah, I do it all the time, yeah.
Keep doing it. Yeah, come
thank
back
you. All right, I will. Am I playing here this year at Christmas? I'm not sure. I have to look. Yeah. I am. Okay, good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
God, something else I got to write.
You've been amazing tonight. Our interviewer mentioned he'd asked you sort of if there's an heir apparent out there that could be the next John Waters. Is there any directors or writers or raconteurs out there that are like, this is the next me?
Well, I don't think they're going to be the next me. There's ones I like a lot. I love Gaspar Noé's movies. I mean, I don't know if you saw Climax. It's the most shocking movie. I like Lars von Trier. I like Todd Solondz. There's lots of filmmakers I like today. But I don't mean that they're going to be my heir, you know, that kind of thing. Mostly when I get reviews of CDC, so it's like a John Waters movie, I usually hate that movie because it usually means they're just trying too hard to be gross, or you know, it's the Pink Flamingos, I guess, thing in it. But no, I don't think there's anybody. Nobody needs to copy me, really, and I don't think anybody has, really. So, but I do think that it's a great time for young filmmakers because now they are looking for the next weirdo kid that made a film on his cell phone. They weren't when I was doing it, but they are now. So get busy, yeah.
All right, we got time for one more. Let's make it a good one. I've talked you up. If you're waving your arm that hard, it better be awesome. No pressure.
This is so much pressure. Okay, first of all, thank you for tonight. This has been hysterical. You mentioned that you don't care for Kamala Harris. Can I ask who is your candidate?
Alfred E. Newman.
No, yeah. And then... yeah. And why?
They're all going to lose. I hate to tell you that because they're all going to fight each other, 21 yeah. people, debating things like, should the Boston bomber be allowed to vote? Oh, God. It's going to be so defeating. It's going to be so defeating. You know, I'm really quite fearful about it. I'd vote for any of them, obviously, but that's not good enough because all those people aren't going to vote and every Trump supporter is going to vote. So I'm quite fearful about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Pope, John Waters.
Thank you. Thank you very much.